Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Bottled in China. I'm your host, Emily Steckenborn, and this is the podcast where we talk about wine, food, beer, and so much more happening from halfway around the world. Liba is China's first handcrafted bottle cocktail brand, and today we speak with co-founder and CEO Alexander Peterson about Liba's explosive growth amidst COVID-19 and the need for craft bottle cocktails in emerging markets. Liba makes a range of bottle cocktails from your favorite Negroni to a cold brew martini, and even more exotic creations like I'm Coconuts, which is sweet and refreshing with hints of spicy chili. It really does sound delicious, right? Well, at first, Liba was focused on business to business and aimed at hotels or even restaurants that wanted to serve customers with consistently delicious craft cocktails, even if they lacked talent behind the bar. But during COVID-19, quarantine measures were in place, and we were all forced to stay inside and not head to our favorite bars. But this allowed them to expand to direct-to-consumer and even support the bartending community by offering to bring the cocktails from mixologists to their customers' doorsteps. Well, let's get this podcast started. But before so, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Bottled in China and subscribe on iTunes and Spotify. But again, if you love this podcast, don't forget to share or give us a 5 stars or even write a review. It means a lot. All right, let's get started. Cheers. All right, everybody, welcome back to Bottled in China. Alexander, welcome to the episode.
Thank you.
So we've been wanting to do this for a while because Liba really blew up in the last, I say, few months, but it's been around for quite a while. So could you tell us your story about yourself and Liba?
We've deliberately been staying under the radar. We originally founded it as three guys, co-founders, kind of a hobby project. Then we got into a little bit of home delivery and catering just to perfect the product. And basically before this year, we were doing mostly business to business, focusing on luxury hotels.
Right.
Some restaurants. But you wouldn't have seen us unless you were staying in these hotels, getting in the mini bar, or, you know, they're serving it in the bar, but you might not have noticed it. So we've been working a lot on that with the visibility of it. And then now with everything going on, we did have plans to go business to consumer, and that's what we've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of seems like we've come out of nowhere for a lot of people, but we've been there. So yeah, we're an international company and we've been around for a couple of years.
Mm.
And now we're just really taking on the direct-to-consumer approach. Yeah.
Right, and you're saying that right now you're based out here in Shanghai, but you also have distribution in Singapore, Hong Kong, Macau, Cambodia, and also an office out in Thailand. So, I mean, this really is not just a small
team. We have full-time team members in Hong Kong and Thailand and China.
Oh, wow, okay.
And that's growing as well, yeah.
So how did it all get started? I mean, what's the story behind it?
It's
Are
an interesting.
Mixologist?
No, I have no F&B background actually. Although I would have liked to, but my background educationally is finance, and then I was in IT before this. And my roommate when I first moved out here was a guy selling whiskey and beer.
Okay.
An Irish guy, so it's very appropriate as well. and he was wanting to do more cocktails to understand his customer better. And so he started doing it at home.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had another friend, another Danish guy, Lars. He was starting up an import business for gins and so on, but very, very early stage. So he got involved as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just couldn't help but see business opportunities and all of it and what we were doing at home. None of us were mixologists by trade, so we felt pretty early on we wanted to bring someone on. That's how we approached Michael Chen. So we got him in as one of the team members there. And then, yeah, it just kind of grew naturally from there. We decided to quit our jobs and go full-time with it, got some small amount of money from friends and family. We're doing okay with catering kind of workshops, office parties, showrooms, different new product launches, etc., and starting some home delivery. But very quickly, because of the friends in the industry, we got a lot of approaches from hotel people, restaurant people, saying this would be useful for them too.
Well, I think now it's incredibly useful. So I want to talk about COVID-19 and how that's actually shaped Liba. Because as you've mentioned before, you guys were definitely a business to business. But today, I mean, not at all. I think it really has shifted. So how has COVID-19 impacted your business strategy?
Yeah, so it came early here in China, of course, compared to the rest of the world. And it's been interesting because February was really stressful and scary. Everything was just down. Nobody was buying anything.
Mm-hmm.
Even now, the hotels are still not really coming back, but they are picking up volume. So we're seeing a lot of that coming back. And then for some reason, I'm not sure how, but since we've opened up in China, April has been really amazing to us. So our whole restaurant and bar vertical is doing much better than it was before.
Okay.
And then our B2C, which we launched in March, has now been booming in China and then even more so booming overseas. Actually, the Singapore business is doing better this month, just in home delivery, than our whole business was doing before COVID-19.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous.
So I feel you guys are one of the lucky unicorn companies who are actually thriving off COVID-19 compared to a lot of people who have to step back and reassess their business.
Well, I mean, I would say for February and March, it's been very difficult, for sure. And the thriving aspect is something that's been pretty recent. But so now we have other issues with supply chain, logistics, and especially when you're sending it to
sea. Can't make enough.
Well, we can, but the problem is that there hasn't been enough ready in stock. And then you're looking at glass bottles, and who in their right mind in Feb and March start to place orders for hundreds of thousands of bottles?
Yeah.
I've just approved production run for over 350,000 cocktails for the next couple of weeks, pretty much. So it's kind of going crazy. But our approach in the beginning was, because we felt we were in a lucky spot, that we were international. So we weathered the storm quite nicely, I think, by being in China when it first hit in China, and that was affecting us, but we had still quite good exports. And then when the rest of the world kind of locked down, we were opening up in China. So they balanced each other out. They didn't compensate, but we weren't, just completely dead in the water like so many other people were. So our approach was really to try and find ways to help the industry as well.
Yeah.
That was when I was talking to a lot of people about what, someone like Ian Ford from back when his experience is doing SARS, talking to the different bars, talking to the Pelushin guys, talking to a lot of different people in the industry, seeing what can we do.
Right.
That's how our project with Bar in a Bottle came about as well. Taking a lot of these bars that are now not serving their customers and bringing them online, putting them on one platform, helping them deliver to their customers, helping them get visibility. I think even more so than sales and royalties of sales was also just being relevant, making sure people still remember that they're there.
Right. And just for everybody listening, that initiative really came during quarantine out here in China, where I saw you guys really work with mixologists and bartenders to really deliver their product through Liba. So just to clarify for everybody who's listening, that you guys really, I think, were at the forefront of that. And also, as you said, kind of swooped in and saved everybody who was in quarantine during this time in China, right?
Yeah, well, people were looking for a little bit of something to do, and we helped to bottle up signature recipes from bars all over China and put them on our platform.
Amazing.
We're actually doing the same thing in Hong Kong now, but it's not launched yet.
So what's the future of bottled craft cocktails?
Well, there's a lot of different ways of looking at that. For us, our main goal would be just to expand the market. So the way I look at it is we really are trying to help grow the pie. We want to be on the side of bartenders and bars. We want to really promote all of this. We want to really make them the champions and help make their products more accessible. So the future would be that anybody anywhere can get craft cocktails. And when they're coming to, just to give you guys a story, we were getting orders from the weirdest places, and we weren't marketing it there. We weren't doing any promotions, and we were getting orders from, really just like all over China, tier 3, tier 4, tier 5 cities. Like, and some of these people who would talk to us were also just saying, oh, we don't have anything like this. This is amazing.
Right.
And I think the interesting thing about what we were doing then and what the bottled cocktails is doing is that those people are now very interested in, next time they come to Shanghai, to go and get that real experience at the bar. Go to Union Trading Company or go to Shake or whatever that might be. So I think the future of it is really just to make it widely accessible.
I love that. That's actually a very interesting angle, because I never thought that sometimes making that experience for people in a different city might be even more appealing than within their own city themselves. And you're right, there was definitely a rise of like the mixologist and the bartender and that personality behind the cocktails. And we've really seen that not only in the US, but here in Shanghai as well, and Chengdu, and also in Beijing. So now hopefully allowing people to experience that when they're just not in the city at all is a really cool thing. And I kind of always thought that Liba would be in the position of just, you know, drinking it because it's there and it's handy. But now that you put it that way, trying to bring the personalities with it, that's actually something I didn't consider at first.
Yeah, so all the pages that we have on our mini program really highlight, they're uniquely designed to the bar, to the bartender, highlighting their story, who they are, their personality, etc. A lot of them have their videos on there, which is kind of a video made just in there.
Oh my God. Okay, so if anybody has not checked it out, I'm going to put a link in the show notes. And honestly, you have to check out these videos. First of all, they're really fun. And then they kind of just capture that essence of like having a bartender like at your door and then like giving you the drink. That kind of
Yeah. Video. Shout out to Graham Kennedy for helping us out with that stuff.
He's
a genius. Yeah.
Oh, that was so well done. I even shared it around and everyone thought it was
really
cool.
Thank you. Yeah. That was fun to shoot all those.
So I want to know, once quarantine gets lifted, once things kind of go back to normal, do you think you're going to experience that same growth?
Yeah, we're looking at a lot of different things that we want to do to bring this forward. There's certain things on the consumer feedback that we want to incorporate. In the past, our volumes haven't justified us just doing new iterations all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing now is that we're producing so much that, you know, we listen to all the customers all the time. And it's very hard when you have physical product and stock that when you want to make an improvement, you're not just going to toss out all your inventory.
Mm-hmm.
But the more you're doing it, the volume makes it easier. And then there's a lot of pipeline things that we are now able to really push, also because it helps us with the MOQs. So our packaging, including garnish, a lot of different things that make it easier.
Mm-hmm.
And then for our space, I mean, we have bars in Beijing, we have bars in Shanghai, you know, all over China pretty much. Hangzhou and Ningbo and so on. And the way I see it is if you're from Beijing and you're drinking cocktails up there, you're going to Black Moth or wherever you might be going, there's only a certain quota. Like, you're not going to be there every single night.
Right.
You're going to be doing different things. But when you don't have access to the bars in Shanghai, maybe you'll add an extra night of cocktail drinking because, okay, I'm a regular at this bar, but now I want to add a few more bars during my week. So your overall consumption of cocktails ends up actually increasing because of the variety.
Mm-hmm.
You have more choice.
Right.
And that's what we want to bring to the consumer as well. And then we're looking at some kind of premium, kind of upscale retail solutions, as well as the off kind of off-trade and on-trade and a lot of different things. But the main thing as well for us is all these big partnerships we're doing now.
Right.
So growth, I think, will be, I mean, how do I put this? We because of everything that's been happening, we have some very interesting, very significant partnership deals that are coming.
Okay.
So my concerns do not really revolve around growth and whether or not we can sell it. It's much more now a logistical supply chain issue.
Right. Yeah. And I think for any business that's obviously growing so rapidly, that's always going to be a top concern, you know?
Hmm.
It's always like you work so hard to get all these orders and now you get them all in such a big number. So that's definitely
we
a logistical
have to step
nightmare.
The planning up a level, that's for sure. Yeah. So we're doing all of that. And
okay.
It's one of those natural evolutions of a business that
certainly
has been overkill if we've done too much in the past, but now very much we need to really be careful with everything and plan accordingly.
Right.
Luckily, we have some very good advisors and mentors in the business, so we're in a good spot to do that.
That's great. And, you know, as you were mentioning all the different countries that you guys have Liba in, what has been the best country to adapt to bottle cocktail trends from your point of view?
That's a good question. And I think some of the markets, I'll use Thailand as an example, even though we just started in December, so it was right before the COVID. And now they're on full lockdown. They won't even do home delivery. They
won't, nothing.
Yeah. It's a weird approach. I don't really understand it because they're not even allowing people to stay home, quarantine, and have a bottle of wine at home. So they're taking a different approach. But what we did see before that was that one of the main reasons for why we also, you know, want to help out is just consistency, speed of service, making sure that like high quality cocktails are available and that we're giving cocktails a good reputation because we're really focusing on the quality.
Right.
And there's a lot of places, especially around Thailand as well, you go to Chiang Mai or whatever, the biggest problems in an industry like the hotel industry where there's so much turnover is just qualified staffing.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we want to really help those in need, the places where that's a difficult thing, mm-hmm. to make sure that they still have to offer cocktails. But if they offer cocktails and they're not capable of really doing it right, it gives people a little bit of it gives cocktails a bad reputation.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Interesting that you say that. So I really do agree with that, because before that, I used to work with Summergate a while back, and especially with their spirits portfolio, it was so hard to get people not only to bring the brand through and sell it, but it was the basic cocktails like gin tonic, Negronis, etc. Really, they had a lot of issues. And as you mentioned, there was maybe one great bartender per hotel, but it wasn't consistent, because if they left or if it was their day off, you would just get horrible service after that or a bad cocktail. So I could definitely see that in emerging markets and also in areas with a high turnover rate, that this would be something that's needed.
Well, when we implement a hotel, in our kind of portfolio, we have hundreds of hotels now, but typically, especially when it's in a warmer country, it's you'll see it at the pool bar. And you'll see it in the bar, in the restaurant, you'll see it in the lobby lounge, maybe in the club lounge, you'll see it in the rooms, in-room dining, also for banquets where there's hundreds of people, whether it's weddings or conferences or business things.
Oh.
And yeah, like they might have a head mixologist, some very good person, but there's only so many hours they can work. So many days, even if it's 6 days a week, there's a day they're not going to be there.
Yeah.
Even if they're going to be in the bar the whole time, well, guess what? There's 10 other outlets that we're probably being served in where that person is not there.
Right.
And they have a big team. And so there's always someone that's new.
Mm-hmm.
And the higher end you go, the harder it gets with the training to stay consistent.
Certainly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are some of the cocktails that you do offer in bottle?
Well, okay, so I think because we have a lot of signatures that are our own creations as well. Everything is kind of made and curated by Michael Chen.
Mm-hmm.
For those who are not familiar with him, he's the beverage director for Nest and Canary, Ryan Co. He has been the general manager for Eau de Vie in Sydney, brought them into top 50 worldwide, stayed there for the 4 years he was there. Another bar as well that was top 50 that he has on his resume. So really top level guy. So some of the classics, we do an espresso martini. Ours is a cold brew martini. We have a Negroni, but our Negroni, so we use Peddler's Gin for this. Peddler's has won silver medal in the San Francisco Spirit Awards, very high level stuff. We do an infusion on that gin with rosemary and strawberry to kind of bring out more character. And then instead of just using one vermouth, we use two. One's a little bit more bitter, one's a little more sweet. And there's a certain ratio in there to keep it very, very well balanced. So we've been tweaking it to the point where we feel like Negroni lovers really like it. And those who don't normally like a Negroni, they're like, oh, that's actually really nice.
Right.
And that's the balance we're trying to find with all of our cocktails. So Old Fashioned we have, of course, as well. So yeah, some of the classics and then some of our signatures.
I had
Bloody Mary
before.
Is my new favorite.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a Canadian staple, I think. But I had your Negroni and it was really delicious, actually. I had it at home and I thought it was the best thing I've ever made, which was open it up, put it in a glass, and add an ice cube. And I was very happy with that creation.
There you go, yeah.
Now, actually, I want to talk about that and freshness. How long, if you do have a bottle of Liba, how long does it stay fresh? And if you've opened it, because you've actually gifted me a big bottle. Like, if I open it, how long can I keep that fresh?
Once you've opened it, I mean, for the Negroni, it can last a long time. Mm-hmm. But with all of them, we just say 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
So once you have it, you should consume it within 2 weeks and probably keep it refrigerated or what are the...
Yeah. Keep it refrigerated.
Okay.
But we have a shelf life of at least 18 months on all of our products.
Okay.
It's been a long process of research and development. And there's a lot of course, you know, different secret stuff that we do to it. But
SO2 maybe?
It comes... there's no added preservatives.
Oh, okay.
No. It's all natural.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, it depends if you want to classify, you know, using acids instead of lime and lemon and so on. But that's pretty normal, I think, as well.
Right.
And then there's a few other things. There's a closed loop. We have a factory up in Jiangsu province. We'll use HPP juices and there's a lot of different factors involved.
Right. So there is definitely a longer shelf life than, you know, as you just mentioned, within 2 weeks. But then you actually, if you have it, it's no problem for
if you haven't opened
months.
It, yeah.
Right.
I mean, the storage, so we did a very extensive third-party kind of beverage consultant lab testing everything with shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're storing it 20 degrees Celsius or below, not in direct sunlight, and not open, so no new oxygen getting in there,
it is...
You know, some of them have 36 months shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, also, I just wanted to ask, what would be the big differentiating point between Liba and, let's say, a mixologist or a bartender who's bottling their own cocktails? Well, is it just the freshness and the shelf life, or what would be the key big points that make you guys very different?
Yeah, so I think because of our volumes, we have access to some, like, you wouldn't necessarily have HPP juices available in your bar.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people do actually, but then they're just mixing them up and putting them together.
Right.
And so when you don't have that in a closed circuit, it kind of defeats the purpose in terms of getting really long shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we have, especially now when you want to talk about COVID, I mean, our product is the most hygienic thing you could possibly drink. It's a very, very high standard facility.
Right.
So China actually, and one thing is for domestic standards, but because of past scandals, in order for us to get our export license, I mean, we've never seen or heard of any standards like that. So a foreign-owned company in China doing food products, you know, well, beverage products for export.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because if something goes wrong, if someone gets sick, they can't control the situation outside of China.
Right.
And that hurts all of the other exports. That's why they have these really, really strict regulations and tests.
Interesting. Okay, wow. Yeah, I never thought of that also, just even the export side of it. And then as you mentioned, the freshness and that shelf life, which is really good for hotels, because that's something that, as you mentioned, and even, you know, high-end grocery stores or even just great restaurants that don't have a bartender on hand, because that's actually a huge problem as well, is like you can't have everybody doing everything, right? So that's something if they did want to have in their menu, the staples like Negroni, it's something you should have on your menu.
It also just takes a while to to mix things up.
Right.
I mean, so that's if you're a busy bar.
Right.
You have a bottleneck on serving speed. I mean, I think we've all tried to sit in a bar and wait 20 minutes, 30 minutes for a drink, sometimes even longer because they forgot it.
Right.
You have to keep reminding them like, hey, where's my drink? That's bad for the customer. They might not come back.
Mm-hmm.
It's also bad for the bar. I mean, that's lost revenue.
Yeah.
If you can serve a drink in the first 5 minutes, they sit down, boom. And by the time they would have otherwise had their first one, they're ordering their next one.
Right.
And then overall, the average just goes up. So they end up ordering a lot more. On top of that, what we see, and we've done a lot of research on this with different clients, there's about 25% waste on cocktails just with overpouring.
Right.
Preparing the juices and the syrups or whatever before the service. And then you know, you can't run out. That would be disaster in the middle of a shift. So you always have a lot extra.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that adds up typically to 25%. That's what we found.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, this is a really great cost-effective alternative then, right?
Yeah. So it depends on who I'm talking to with what I kind of say about it. But if we're talking to hotels and restaurants and bars, it's a no-brainer in terms of the financials of it.
Right.
Of course, it's our duty to really make sure that the quality is there too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So I've also seen some trends with canned cocktails, and now we're having, of course, bottled cocktails. It's been there for a while. What are some cool other innovative trends within that space of pre-made high-end cocktails?
I'm seeing a lot of kegged cocktails.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't think of that.
Oh, yeah, of course. It's big in the U.S.
Right.
We're seeing it around here. There's even a bar in Hong Kong that's dedicated to kegged cocktails.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't
just
even
on
know
draft,
that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's called Draftland, I believe. I haven't
that
actually been there.
That sounds quite appropriate.
Yeah, I haven't been there. I heard it's pretty cool, but I need to check it out next time I go, which I don't know when that is going to be.
And as like a cocktail lover, would you be okay with that idea of getting your cocktail straight from a tab? Like, I feel like, does it take away from the experience? Does it take, like, do you know what I mean? Because when I go to a cocktail bar, I really feel I'm there to see them mix the drinks and to be part of that and to understand how it all comes together. And then it's presented in front
you
of
should.
Me.
Yeah.
So would that take away, and as a cocktail lover, would that take away from it if we turn towards those new innovative methods?
I don't think that should be taken away by any means. If I'm in a bar, I would also probably want to to see that,
mm-hmm.
For sure. And I think that's part of why we even are allowed to exist, is because these guys exist. So we want to make sure that these are the kind of the heroes of the industry, so to speak. But that being said, when you also are very busy, I can't even imagine. I can't even count how many times I've ordered a Corona. Well, Corona times, but ordered a Corona instead of a cocktail because I just know it's going to take forever.
Yeah,
I've left my group of friends, gone to the bar, gotten their attention, and I just know I'm like, okay, I need to get back there because I'm just losing out. I don't want to stand here and wait.
Yeah.
I'm not going to order something complex. It's too busy.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just get a bottled beer and bring it back. It's the quickest thing.
Yeah,
that's also lost money to the bar. And
right.
I would have preferred to spend the extra money and have a cocktail.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. I think when you look at it on that perspective, it definitely has a place and a time for it, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's some bars where we have the full kind of bar menu that's
right.
Libus being served. But most of them, when you're talking about the bar, they'll do their own stuff as well. And then they can try and push ours when it gets really busy because it helps a lot. And also when their senior people for some reason aren't there, when it's all due, they can also push that a little bit more.
Mm.
So it helps out.
Right. And I want to know from your point of view, what are some of the learnings that you've taken from COVID-19 in the bar industry?
I think I've always been known to be a very optimistic guy. Just grit, tenacity, just going at it. I mean, it always works out in the end. I really believe that.
Mm-hmm.
I was on holiday in Malaysia when it all broke out in China for Chinese New Year. And I flew back on January 31st. Everybody thought I was crazy. And like, it was all going crazy in China.
Business.
Well, you know, there's a lot of news coming out all the time. There's even more rumors and speculation. So people are like, oh, are you kidding me going back? But obviously with everything going on, I just had to go back. I think.
Right.
Everything was shut down, but me and one of my co-founders, we spent, 16-hour days just sitting at the office, talking, brainstorming, trying to see what we could do, come up with different ideas, inviting other small business owners over to have a chat with us and see how we could collaborate.
Right. That's really exciting. Have you also seen some cocktails that just cannot be in a bottle? Like, there's some things that just, of course, Negroni just seems like an ideal fit because of the style and also just mm-hmm. the flavors, and somehow has that more depth to it. But are there some cocktails that you just would never put in a bottle?
So I'm sure you could still do it. We probably would not like put something like a White Russian on next up just with like the milk and
right.
So dairy, egg whites can be very tricky as well. Mm. We do have whiskey sour.
What about anything with like CO2? Like anything that's kind of spritzy? Would you have, could
yeah,
that course, be
yeah,
done?
You could. Yeah.
So easily. You just bottle under pressure?
So you need to look into the, first of all, the bottles have to be a little bit different. They have to be able to
right.
support the pressure. So you want to make sure that is there. And then the capping and everything, you can easily do it, yeah.
Wow.
And it fits quite well.
Yeah.
We don't do any carbonated drinks ourselves, at the moment at least, but I've seen different ones and I think, yeah, perfect.
Wow. I think that there's so much that can be done, and I think COVID woke us up from not being so experimental and has forced us to be a lot more experimental.
Yeah, I didn't want to interrupt, but I remember over at the Alimentari, I just recently discovered, I've known they've had it, but I tried out the spritz that they have.
Right, yes.
Great example.
Right, that's true.
Surprisingly enough, the ratios always get mixed up.
Mm.
People will, it sounds easy, and the recipe's on the bottle.
But
somehow,
it still gets messed up. Yeah,
whenever
that's
you
true.
And that's the thing, right? That's the whole thing with bottling it up.
Right.
The consistency of it.
Yeah.
Because people are in a rush and they'll mess it up.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, I've tried it. It was like, okay, perfect. That's exactly what I expected when the ratio was perfect.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it definitely does work.
Right. All right. And just to wrap up, usually what I do is I ask you three quick questions and you have
okay.
to answer as quickly as possible.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
What is your go-to cocktail in Liba from your Liba collection, though?
Old Fashioned. Earl's Old Fashioned.
Okay.
Yep.
Second one. When it comes to cocktail, what is the next market? I feel you've really done a lot in Asia. Would you look at expanding out of Asia?
Yeah, we are. We have a lot more markets coming in Asia. That's been in the pipeline. It was postponed a little bit the past few months, but very much a thing now.
Mm-hmm.
Although, again, supply, we just need to have enough in the current markets. That's the main thing. So that's going to take a month or so to really make sure we're on top of that. Then there's more markets. And we are looking at UK and Europe.
Nice.
Yeah.
And of course, my last question is, how can we get in touch with you and learn more about Liba and order some?
Follow Liba on WeChat or write to us. Follow us on Instagram at Liba Beverages. We're not such a big company that if you write to our Instagram, I won't be notified if you're
going to respond. Okay, that's what we need.
I don't see it. Like, I'm not looking at them, but if you write there, like, hey, message for Alex or some, you know, whatever, they'll probably take a screenshot and send it to me.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, we're going to put more information in the show notes. Alexander, thank you so much for joining
thank
us
you.
Today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited. I mean, maybe the future of cocktails is actually all bottled up, right?
I hope not.
It's one way.
We have a place, you know, we definitely have a role to play, right. And we're very excited about that. We just want to make sure that the industry keeps growing.
Awesome.
Yep. Thank you.